Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at. Illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to... what the future will bring, and I have to remind you, the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, and for the next hour, they're going to be the views of L.A. or Lynn Marzulli, who hopefully we'll have him on the line here very shortly. And Lynn has written a fascinating book called Politics, Prophecy, and the Supernatural. And Lynn, of course, comes not only from the point of view of an investigative reporter and an excellent writer, but he is also he's a minister as well. So he's looking at things already from the point of view of, well, from the point of view of politics, the point of view of prophecy, and then from the point of view of the supernatural. And, of course, that really is such an important part of everything that's going on today. Because Lynn really begins his book by talking about what's going on in the world today. And he says, I believe that the human race is at a juncture. I believe that history as we know it is about to change. And this change ultimately will be for the better. I believe that war, sickness, famine, hurt, separation, and everything that has made living on this planet not worthwhile be eradicated. No, those are very, very positive philosophies. Certainly he looks at the prophecies that are in the Bible and amazing information. And lastly, of course, he looks at what's going on from the supernatural point of view. Lynn, thank you so very much for being with us tonight.
Dr. Stan, thanks for having me on. I really appreciate it.
Well, let's go ahead and start out talking really about politics. Where does politics put into this? And where does, of course, what's happening with radical Islam fit into this?
Well, the political... I actually bring my readers into this one quote, which I then bring them back to throughout the entire book, and that's simply this. The present political landscape is in direct correlation to supernatural events that happened, in some cases, millennia ago. Of course, what I mean by that is the current political landscape that we see. Specifically, I target one area, the Middle East. But really, globally, the political landscape is linked back to, historically, for supernatural events that happened in those areas. For instance, and we've talked about this before, Dr. Stan, but in our country, in the United States of America, we celebrate two supernatural events. We celebrate Christmas, which is the virgin birth of the God-man Jesus, and then several months later we celebrate his crucifixion and resurrection. These are supernatural events that literally are off the charts. That the only person I'm aware of in all of history who could claim this type of events, being born of a virgin and then later on in his life being crucified and resurrected from the dead, truly was the Son of God. Of course, that's what we believe. So, but these are supernatural events that happened two millennia ago, and they affect our culture greatly. We celebrate Christmas. So we can see that our worldview in the West, and specifically you could make a case for the Christian West, is linked back to supernatural events.
And but I think most people really don't think of it that way. In fact, most people sort of scoff at the idea of the supernatural, and yet many of them profess a belief in Christianity, and there's no way that you can believe in Christianity without believing in the supernatural.
Absolutely, Dr. Stan, absolutely. And unfortunately, the supernatural has been decoupled from our everyday life. And yet, our entire Western civilization is really based on supernatural events that happened millennia ago.
And, of course, there's supernatural events that are happening today, and this is what most people don't understand. And there is an eternal battle between the darkness and the light that's being manifested, being played out today. That eternal battle that began in the Garden of Eden, and certainly between Satan and God, and it's being played out today. And it is a supernatural battle. And most people, they're so busy being busy, they don't have time to think about it. But it's time that they do. We'll be right back with Lynn. Well, Lynn, you go ahead and pick up the story there.
Okay, great. So we know that, at least in the West, and we believe in Christianity. We believe in this God, man, Jesus. But let's just tour quickly around and hit some spots in the globe, in other parts of the globe. Let's say Israel, for instance. Now, Israel was at least scattered throughout the nations of the earth for about 2,000 years. That scattering, or that diaspora is really what the word is called, continued for about 2,000 years. And then we see prophecy coming into play here. Of course, I'm getting ahead of myself a little bit. But we see Israel regathered from the four corners of the earth and reestablished in their homeland. Regardless of those events, and people don't realize that regathering of ancient Israel and reestablished in their homeland is a fulfillment of a prophecy written 2,500 years ago, specifically Ezekiel 37. What I find interesting is that even today, most people would say, well, Israel's really a secular nation. Well, that may be true, but part of Israel is rooted and grounded in supernatural events that happened literally millennia ago. Specifically, Israel celebrates the Passover. And, of course, the Passover is right from the book of Exodus, where the angel of death passes over the firstborn of the Israelite children and instead slays the firstborn of the Egyptians. And this is the singular event which finally lets Pharaoh's had enough, and he lets Israel go, and the rest you can read on your own. But the bottom line is they celebrate Passover, and they've been celebrating Passover for millennia. They're celebrating a supernatural event that happened millennia ago. And now that they're back in their homeland, they're still celebrating the supernatural event, and they're also fulfilling this prophecy. In other words, if I had been alive, let's say, in World War II, and I had known about the Holocaust and the gas chambers and what was happening to the Jews, at that point I would have said, well, Israel is, and knowing the prophecy of Ezekiel 37, smart money would have been, there's no way Israel is ever going to be reestablished in their homeland. It's just not going to happen. And yet we see from the birth pangs of the Holocaust, from the horrors of the Holocaust, we see the birth of the nation of Israel, which fulfills, in my opinion, the prophecies 2,500 years ago of Ezekiel, specifically Ezekiel 37. So there's another, interestingly enough, there's another prophetic utterance by Jesus himself, who says that Jerusalem would be trampled over until the times of the Gentiles were over. And we see that from when Titus comes in AD 70 with the Roman army and completely lays siege to Jerusalem and then destroys that city, we see that up until this time, in fact, Jerusalem was ruled by the Gentiles.
Hold that thought. We'll be right back here. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Lynn was simply talking about the birth of Israel as a nation after 2,000 years. And, of course, this had been prophesied 500 years before Israel, before Jerusalem was destroyed in 70 A.D., and the Jews were dispersed throughout the world. And yet it had been prophesied by Ezekiel, 570 years earlier, that the people would one day return to the Holy Land. And really, what an exciting thing it is to realize that we're seeing today the fulfillment of prophecy. Now, a lot of people don't like to believe it. Oh, it was just coincidence they got back. It was the Zionists that brought them back. It was, but they never would have come back had it not been for the Holocaust. The Jews wouldn't have left the security of their homes in Europe and in other parts of the world and returned had it not been for the terrible, terrible things that happened during the Second World War. And although you don't like to think that God had a hand in that, I believe he allowed these things to happen so that children of Israel could return. And, of course, as Lynn points out, most of them are not religious Jews at all. In fact, a relatively small number of the Jews in Israel today are truly conservative or Torah-believing Jews. But pick this story up there, Lynn.
Well, we see, and we've talked about the United States and Western civilization as a whole, and we can see that it's really tied back and linked to supernatural events, and we have already discussed those. And then we look at Israel, and we see that Israel, modern Israel, celebrates events, supernatural events that happened again millennia ago. And so we see that these supernatural events have literally colored the entire civilization of both Israel, modern Israel today, and of course Western civilization. Everything, most of what we do, and we are enculturated in this. Now, I said earlier, but there's like a decoupling, there's a disconnect between the supernatural, especially in the West with the Age of Reason and technology. We have kind of pulled back away from the supernatural, and most of us in the West, unfortunately, look at it with very skeptical lenses, and through a skeptic's lens. And unfortunately, that really isn't the case, or shouldn't be the case, because in my opinion, the supernatural is exactly what the word says. It's supernatural. It is really the ultimate reality, is when we begin to look at the supernatural and what is happening. So in the political realm, we see that one more example of this, that we see in the nation of Iran, we see political Islam, or radical Islam, being shaped there. And of course, that whole body politic in Iran believe what they believe, and they live under Sharia law, which is directly taken from the Quran. The Quran was given to their prophet Muhammad about 1,300 years ago, allegedly from the angel Gabriel. Now, Christians will immediately dispute that this is not the same angel Gabriel in the Bible. And there lies the huge gap between what the Quran says and what Christian scriptures say. We believe that Jesus Christ is the Son, the only Son of God, came and died on the cross and was resurrected the third day. And you know, now ascended to the heaven. Muslims do not believe that. They believe that he was just a prophet, was not the Son of God, and that actually Muhammad was the last prophet. So we have a real disparity between worldviews. And from the Quran, we get the Sharia law. Sharia law and the Quran itself is what is literally, in my opinion, the main factor that is behind the radical jihadist that we have seen raise its ugly head basically in the last 15 to 20 years. And it's not going to go away. And when you have a group of people that are in Iran that are continually threatening the nation of Israel and saber-rattling, it goes on continually from their president, Mahmoud Ahmadinejad, who says, quotes, and I'll quote verbatim, that Israel is a dry, withered tree soon to be plucked up by its roots. So we can see that there's not a lot of wiggle room between what Mr. Ahmadinejad is saying and where and some sort of detente, let's say, for the nation of Israel. It just doesn't resonate there at all. There's no love relationship between the two states. And this is because in Islam, and I can back this up all through my book, Politics, Prophecy, and the Supernatural, I give examples of this. But the Muslims believe that the Jews are descendants from pigs and apes, literally. And I'm not making this stuff up. That's what they believe. So if you start there, essentially, that somehow this race of people is subhuman, you basically wind up with exactly the same type of ideology that the Third Reich and the Nazis used in World War II. And that's how they were able to literally liquidate, kill, massacre, destroy, lead to death 6 million people, specifically Jews, and kill them because they were subhuman. Not only the Jews, but you look at Catholics and homosexuals and just a whole array of people that were put into the ovens and killed and liquidated in the death camps. And of course, in my opinion, and I get into this, into politics and politics, prophecy, and the supernatural, that in my opinion, the Holocaust, the word Holocaustine in German, which means as on a burnt as an offering, as on an altar, a burnt offering on an altar. And what we see is that the higher ups in the Nazi regime were occult adepts, and this is well documented. They knew what they were doing. They were sacrificing those bodies, literally, to their god Satan. And I believe that they cracked open a portal, which let the supernatural back in. I'm getting ahead of my story a little bit, but to hold on to that thought, because I really believe that that happened in World War II, and there is certainly evidence of that. Again, the skeptic in the West will go, please, where's your evidence? You know, prove it to me. I want something tangible, something that I can study and run through a barrage of tests. Well, unfortunately, the supernatural doesn't work that way. Oftentimes, it doesn't leave a trace. To jump a little completely out of this conversation, in a sense, you could look at the Shroud of Turin, and I make a good case, and other people do also, that the Shroud of Turin, in my opinion, is the calling card of Jesus. In other words, the calling card of God. I believe it has holographic imagery on the Shroud of Turin, which speaks of the supernatural event of all the ages, and of course that's the resurrection of the God-man Jesus on the third day from that tomb. And I think the Shroud of Turin is an actual record of that, and unfortunately the carbon dating was skewed when they did it, which is a whole other discussion which we can get into. But again, that's like a supernatural calling card for us. I think God left that to show us in future generations, which is where we are now, that this event really happened. Here's a calling card. Here's something which as some scientists and physicists look at the Shroud, believe that this is a whole different type of physics that they're looking at. They don't even know how this image was put on the shroud. And I'm aware of the skeptics that say it was painted, but that's just, when you examine the evidence, and I've examined and read on this for over 25 years now, and in my opinion, it's the real deal. But that's, I digress, a little bit of a rabbit trail. Let me come back on point here. You've got the politics, and I just talked about the United States and Israel and then Islam, and I singled out only one country for radical Islam, and that certainly is Iran. We can see that Islam now is spreading throughout Europe when we look at the reaction to the Danish cartoons, when we look at the reaction of the Islamists in France where they burn cars. What's interestingly enough is just recently, in the last weekend in fact, Kosovo declared independence. And what most Americans don't understand, and this is doublespeak from our media, and they've been completely disingenuous about this, that there's been this ethnic fight. There's been this fight between the Serbs, and they call them the ethnic Albanians. Well, the ethnic Albanians are Muslims. That's what they are. And this stems from about almost 1,000 years ago when the Turks came in, and they took over the lower part, which is then Yugoslavia. So there's been this strain, there's been this tension where the Yugoslavs, the descendants of those, now the Serbs, want that territory back. So for Kosovo to declare its independence, of course now the Palestinians are looking at this and going, well, we want to declare our independence. And now the Muslim radicals in Chechnya say, well, we want to declare our independence.
Well, so, I think really what's so interesting, then, is, of course, that the United States is favoring the Muslims there.
Unbelievable.
We're really tied directly into Al-Qaeda, just as they are. The Muslims in Bosnia were tied to Al-Qaeda, and we were backing them even after, of course, in 1995, when the Bosnian War was going on, even after the first attack on the World Trade Center in 1993, and we knew this was Al-Qaeda. At the time, we were watching, we were tracking the whole thing. And in 1995, we backed Al-Qaeda in Bosnia. In 2000, we backed Al-Qaeda and the Muslim Al-Qaeda Kosovo Liberation Front, there in Kosovo. But the American people don't understand that what's really going on in Kosovo, this is not simply a country that wants to become independent. This is the Muslim takeover of part of Serbia. And we're actually supporting it, which really doesn't make sense. But then so much of what goes on today really doesn't make sense unless you understand the supernatural forces influencing our leaders and their leaders.
And that's the third leg of the book, of course, the supernatural. And I want to lead up to that. And I agree, Dr. Stan, what most Americans don't understand is that there's a force behind this thing which is driving it. I call it, the subtitle of the book is called The Coming Great Deception and the Luciferian Endgame. And I believe that when, as 2 Thessalonians tells us, that when Satan comes, he comes with all signs and lying wonders. And in my opinion, the church is completely asleep at the wheel with this. They have no idea the show that's in store for us when Satan decides to finally reveal his agenda. And I believe we're ramping up to it faster than most people can even imagine. And of course, we see supernatural events that are manifesting throughout the globe, and I'll touch on that in a little while. But getting back on point, politics part, we see now that the political landscape literally has been shaped by supernatural events that have happened millennia ago. And we see now this tension between the Jews, which are now reestablished in their ancient homeland of Israel, and the Muslims, who call it the Day of Catastrophe. That's what they call it. They call it the Day of Catastrophe, the day that Israel actually became a nation. To them, it was a day of catastrophe. Israel now is surrounded on the west in the Gaza Strip by Hamas, in the north in what is southern Lebanon by Hezbollah, and of course the rest, the Jordan, which is certainly a Muslim country, Saudi Arabia, Muslim country, and Iran, which will have nukes in the near future.
Well, we're really on the edge of a major cataclysmic event, and of course as goes the Middle East, as goes the Near East, so this is going to have a profound impact on the United States. But most people don't understand that. They don't understand that everything is in place for a major war in the Near East. And certainly the head of the Hezbollah, a man named Nasrallah, is saying, we're going to attack and destroy Israel. Ahmadinejad, Iran, is saying exactly the same thing. The leaders of Hamas are saying exactly the same thing. The leaders of Syria saying the same things. And here in America, we go blithely on our way as if there's nothing to worry about. Everything's just bright and rosy. We'll go right ahead, Lynn.
So, as we talked before the break, that that Israel literally is surrounded by hostile nations, and there's no doubt about this. And they both come from completely different worldviews and different paradigms. Israel believes in, like, in my opinion, the same God that we do, God Jehovah. In fact, you know, the Old Testament makes up part of our Bible. So we believe, like Israel does, to a point. And then, of course, we believe in that Yeshua HaMashiach, Jesus the Messiah, was in fact the Messiah, and of course that's what we believe in. Interestingly enough, that, you know, Jesus, when he came, he tells his disciples, as he's leaving the Temple Mount, that not one stone will be left turned up upon another. And of course, when Titus came in AD 70, he fulfilled that prophecy. Not one stone is remained left standing on the other. And we see that the Temple Mount complex, no one really knows where the ancient temple stood. Most Americans really don't understand the tension here, but the Muslims have their third holiest site, which is the Dome of the Rock, directly on the existing Temple Mount, or what was the Temple Mount. The Temple Mount is big. It's not like a city block or like a half an acre or an acre. It's between 35 and 40 acres in size. And it's got huge, huge underground cisterns where at one time water used to fill it for the sacrifices. And I mean, it's just a very, very complex area. And the Dome of the Rock now sits on the Temple Mount. And of course, this causes great tension because the Israeli Jews and the religious Israeli Jews want to rebuild the third temple. They want to do this, and every year they carry the cornerstone out, or at least try to bring the cornerstone into Jerusalem, which just the fact that they have the cornerstone and it's coming into Jerusalem is enough to spark the Muslims to completely riot, which is of course what they do, and the rest is history. When Ariel Sharon set foot on the Temple Mount, Yasser Arafat, who was alive at the time, declared intifada, and of course that went on for years, and the bloodshed was on both sides. So we can see that the Temple Mount is a real hot-button issue. And again, I'm kind of foreshadowing where I'm going to go with this thing. But the rebuilding of the Third Temple on the Temple Mount in Israel will fulfill prophecy, ancient prophecy, which tells us that the person who does this, who cuts the deal with Israel to rebuild that temple, it can be none other than the Antichrist. That's the guy who will do it. And I believe we're gearing up, ramping up for this. Israel, there's a website your listeners can go to. It's called the Temple Institute, and you can go and see all the different implements that the priests in Israel have already manufactured and made. They're getting ready to set this thing up. What's interesting also is in recent studies in the DNA, realized that they were able to trace the Levitical priesthood right back to Aaron, because they all have the same gene, which is just absolutely incredible when you think about it, that here it is, like thousands of years later, and, you know, even after the diaspora, when the Jews are completely scattered, but because of the miracles of DNA, we can now trace the genealogy of the Levites back thousands of years, and so someone who you know, believes he might be a Levite can get DNA testing, and of course that's what we see happen, and now you're a Levite. So the Israelis actually have a priesthood that is ready to go, and which is just astounding when you think about it.
And of course the Levites, you know, were actually the priestly group there, and so they're looking for, you know, the high priest, the descendant of the high priest, who will be there when they rebuild the temple. And it's just a matter, not if, but when. We'll be back in just a moment. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and as Sidney Lin was talking about, really what's going on, the Jews are prepared to rebuild the temple. They try every year to bring the cornerstone for the new temple into Israel, and then, of course, when they try to do that, the Arabs are up in arms, and of course, there's this conflict that's been going on, going back to the time of Ishmael and Isaac. So, understand that everything is in place. The Jews have all of the implements that they need for the temple, and Lynn was suggesting you go up on the internet and look up the website for the Temple Mount Association, and you can see all the various things, whether it be the abra, the candelabra that they have, or the gowns for the high priest, and they've even through DNA be able to track back to the direct descendants of the Levites, who are the priests. And the high priest is waiting now to begin sacrificing in the temple itself. And, of course, if the Jews go ahead and build that temple, why, of course, there'll be a tremendous conflict with the Arabs. So pick up the story there, Lynn.
Well, it's interesting if we can see that prophecy is on the horizon, in my opinion. I believe that I'll see it in my lifetime. And I'll be 58 this year. So I really believe that I'll see some of these things come down in the not-too-distant future. We also, now that we've established the political, we see that these nations, certainly we can make a very strong case that radical Islam takes its worldview and its paradigm directly from the Quran. I mean, that's where it comes from. Iran lives under Sharia law. Saudi Arabia lives under Sharia law. Their worldview, their paradigm is completely colored by supernatural events that happened to their prophet Muhammad. In Israel, not all the Jews, but many of the Jews, want that temple to be rebuilt. They celebrate their ancient homeland. Of course, it's you know, next year in Jerusalem. They're awaiting their Messiah. So we see, once again, supernatural events coming into play. We see that the West and Europe, even though it's post-Christian, and that for the most part, people have no idea, have lost their roots, lost their identity, don't understand what their freedoms were founded on. Specifically in this country, we're starting to disconnect this generation, not necessarily my generation, but my children have already disconnected. Most of them have no clue as to why we enjoy the freedoms that we have. And of course, Francis Schaeffer points that out. You can make a strong case that this is linked back to the Protestant Reformation and your characters like John Locke in England, and that whole Reformation was just swept in, and people in this country, the founding fathers, took that as the basis and of their worldview and their paradigm, and from that we're able to create the Constitution and the Declaration of Independence, which is why we enjoy the freedoms that we enjoy. It's the first country in all of history that has the type of freedoms and the rights for each individual man. Granted, it's not perfect, and people will call up and say, well, what about the American Indians? What about slavery? And I agree. And I mention that in my book, Politics, Prophecy, and the Supernatural. These are blights on our country. These are black marks on our country. But hopefully, in some ways, we've tried to rectify those things. We've tried to turn them around. No country is perfect here. But to say that this country is evil, or that we were founded on evil, an evil paradigm, is, in my opinion, completely absurd. It's founded, and the freedoms that we enjoy can be directly traced, as Francis Schaeffer so eloquently puts it, back to the Protestant Reformation. So we see that the body politic globally, and I've only hit three. I mean, you can make case for the Hindu religion and the animists and other religions, which I won't get into for the purpose of our discussion. These three, I think your listeners get the point, that supernatural events have shaped the body politic. The next thing, the next leg of the book, is the prophetic. And what I deal with, of course, once again, is Israel. And Israel has come back into the homeland, like we mentioned a little earlier. And because of that, we see that this fulfills Ezekiel 37. What's kind of very sobering is that after Ezekiel 37, we see chapter 38 and 39. And that speaks of a confederacy of nations going up against a land of unwalled villages in the latter days, in the end time. It's very specific when this happens. It says, in the latter days, in the end times. And you can look at it in pretty much any translation you want, and the gist is the same thing. It's the end of days, last days, end times. End times, that's when this thing is. And the Confederacy of Nations, which are named, we see now, because of the body politic, which we talked about, and supernatural events which have affected the modern body politics, specifically radical Islam, we see that this is shaping up. We also know that Russia, with Putin, is definitely playing footsie with Ahmadinejad and Iran. There can be no doubt that Russia is arming Iran, and the two are in bed with each other.
And there's no question at all that certainly is going on. But the strange thing is that we are still sending money to Russia under one guise or another. Why are we doing that? Why are we sending technology to them and, of course, to China? And we're building up the military potential for China, military potential for Russia, the military potential for the Islamic nations, and that's a Sybil Edmonds story, transferring nuclear technology to the Muslim nations. But we can't let the American people know that. None of this makes sense if you look at it logically, but if there is a supernatural plan, if there are forces working behind the scenes that are intent upon plunging the world into a terrible, terrible confrontation and holocaust, then it all really begins to make sense.
Thank you.
Well, this is Archer Stan, and we're just pointing out that if you look at so much of what goes on today, it's contradictory. If you look at the point of view from the point of view that there are other forces there, and perhaps even supernatural forces, that are directing the course of world events that most people don't understand, then, of course, we can begin to make some sense out of the things that already appear to be just totally confusing. So pick the story up, Lynn.
Well, like we talked about before the break again, that there's this confederacy of nations which are going to come up against a land of unwalled villages. And it says, we've already, I think, nailed down the time, and it's in the latter days, it's in the end times. And do we see this confederacy of nations? Yes, we do. And the nations that are mentioned in the Ezekiel prophecy, the first one is Gog Magog, which many prophecy buffs believe is Russia. It also could be Turkey. You could also make a case that it might be Turkey and the Caucasus and that whole area in there, and certainly the lower part, which is like Afghanistan, Tajikistan, all those areas. You could also make a case that they seem to be linked together. For the purposes of tonight's discussion, let's just call it Russia. Let's just say Gog Magog is Russia, and we see that Putin is in bed with the Iranians. The Russians give them all sorts of weaponry and military training, and even apparently nuclear fuel to help bring to fruition their nuclear program. What's interesting and really terrifying when you think about the prophecy, by the way, this is written 2,500 years ago, is that the second nation listed in that prophecy of Ezekiel 38 is the nation of Persia. Persia, until very recently, was always called Persia. Now it is called Iran. So we see that Iran and Persia really are at the same place, has been geographically the same place for millennia. And just recently, in the latter part of the 20th century, was the name changed. If you talk to expatriated Iranians, they will say, instead of Iranians, you know, if you ask them where you're from, they'll say, I'm from Persia. 9 out of 10 times, they'll say, I'm from Persia. They've kind of done a disconnect, associated with themselves with the radical Islamic regime in Iran. Be that as it may, the name has changed, but the location that Ezekiel is telling us in Ezekiel 38 is the same location. That is in modern-day Iran. So we see this confederacy of nations, and other nations are listed, which I believe might be the Sudan and certainly Libya. Interestingly enough, Jordan is not part of the fray. There's a prophecy in Isaiah 17, which talks about that the city of Damascus is a ruinous heap. And, of course, that prophecy has never happened. Damascus is I think it's the oldest city that's had continuous habitation by human beings on the planet. So we've never seen that prophecy being fulfilled. And unlike some prophecy scholars, I believe that these two events may be linked together.
Hold that thought. We'll be right back. Okay. Well, this is Dr. Stan. I guess this is Lynn Mysoulian. And Lynn, before we go on, I want you to get your website out and tell people how they can get your book.
The best place to do it is go online and go to my website, Spiral, like a spiral staircase, spiraloflife.com, spiraloflife.com, and you can follow the links right to the book and read some reviews of it. You can also sign up for the monthly newsletter, which is a continuation, up-to-date review, an expose of politics, prophecy, and the supernatural. There are interviews. There's lots of commentary by myself over a variety of different articles, which I'm constantly looking for on a daily basis, and do commentary on them and hopefully compile it. And the reason for this is I really feel that this is something that the church and non-believers need to look at. Certainly if you're a non-believer and you start looking at this stuff, it begs the question, gee, if these prophecies are written 2,500 years ago and they seem to be accurate, it begs the question, who or what is outside our space-time continuum that somehow knows the beginning from the end from the beginning, and tells us this, calls out things before it happens, just like the Isaiah the prophet, you know, talks about, I am God, there is no other, I tell you things before they happen. And that's exactly what we see here.
Then do you have a telephone number that they can
call? I do. 310-457-5564.
One more time.
310-457-5564.
And let me just point out, you can remember Spiral of Life. Just think of the DNA of a chain. If you've ever seen a picture of the DNA, it's a spiral. And it's a spiral of life. And so you can remember the website, Spiral of Life. Is that .com or .org?
.com.
.com. So spiraloflife.com. And this is an excellent book, Politics, Prophecy, and the Supernatural, because it really says what we try to say here at Radio Liberty. I think you'll enjoy it a great deal. And of course, then Lynn was talking about the prophecies. And the prophecies really are, of course, talking about this confederation of nations coming against Israel and Gog and Magog. And certainly some people think it could be Turkey. Some people think it could be Russia. Certainly we're not sure, but it would appear to be the nations in that region. But then the second one that is named, second nation that is named is Persia. And Persia has been Persia, you know, for 2,500 years. Now we call it Iran, but it's really Persia. And they are going to be moving against Israel. Now, these things were prophesied, you know, in Ezekiel 38 and 39. If you haven't read that, you really need to read the ancient prophecies, and maybe you're not even a Christian. But read them anyway and understand that these prophecies were made, and it's almost as if it is exactly what's going on today. And you see the sides lining up in the ready for this next great battle. It's sort of like a football field when you see the two teams there on the you know, and of course you got the one team in one uniform and the other team in another uniform, and that they always have numbers on their backs, and of course those would be identifying who they are. And of course we see that mentioned Gog and Magog, and then of Persia. And so many of these nations are actually named. Go ahead.
What amazes me is the prophecy gives us something very specific. And it says that, I will go up against the land of unwalled villages. In other words, this confederacy of nations now will come up against a land of unwalled villages. And of course, it's talking about the regathering of Israel. Remember, Ezekiel 37 comes before 38 and 39, obviously. And in that prophecy, it says, I will regather you from the four corners of the earth and reestablish you in your ancient homeland. So we see that in Ezekiel 38, we see this confederacy of nations now coming up against a land of unwalled villages. What that might not sound like it's an eye-opener to us today, but remember, in the ancient world, and specifically when this prophecy was penned 2,500 years ago, that in the ancient world, there was no such thing as a land of unwalled villages. The first thing you would do would build the largest, highest, thickest, strongest wall or moat, whatever, around your city to protect your loved ones, your crops, your valuables, and your way of life. If you didn't do that, a larger country with a larger army would come up against you and wipe you out, take your women, take your food, take your crops, and your kids would become slaves. So this is the way the ancient world did warfare. We talked about earlier Titus, the Roman general's siege in AD 70. And of course, what we realize by that is that siege took upwards well over a year. And when the siege finally, when they finally were able to breach the walls in the ancient city of Jerusalem, over 1 million inhabitants were slaughtered. This was warfare, okay? This was the way warfare was conducted until recent times, which then kicks in the prophetic. And that recent times, with the advent of the airplane, of course, then a land of unwalled or walled villages, a land of walled villages, now becomes obsolete, because you can build the highest wall you want and the thickest wall you want. It might keep out an army and maybe slow down a tank, but certainly an airplane is just going to be able to fly over it and just bomb the heck out of it, and that's exactly what we see. So warfare has changed, and as warfare has changed, and with the advent of aeronautics and what have you, we see now that the landscape is now set, the stage is being set, whatever analogy you want to use, the stage is being set for this prophecy to be fulfilled, which is just incredible, because we see that this confederacy is coming up against a land of unwalled villages. Exactly, very, very specific of what we see shaping up in the Middle East. And of course, we talked about the saber rattling, the ongoing saber rattling of Mahmoud Ahmadinejad in Iran and Nasrallah in Lebanon. Basically, last week said the same thing, that we were declaring an all-out war against Israel. And now we know that Al-Qaeda operatives are in the Gaza Strip trying to help Hamas. So this, it looks really nasty, and Israel is definitely up against the wall.
And I think one of the most interesting prophecies you mentioned was the fact that it's prophesied that Damascus will be destroyed. Now, Damascus has been around for 3,000 years or more, and it's never been destroyed. So here's a prophecy that is waiting to happen. How could you possibly destroy Damascus? It's a great big city there. Well, of course, a nuclear bomb would just lay it in rubble, and we're told that Damascus will simply become rubble, you know, at some time in the future. And could that be the time we're talking about? Because it's very obvious that Israel, if there is a war over there, Syria will be involved, and really Israel will have no choice at all but to use nuclear weapons, the only way to survive, so go right ahead.
That's exactly what the premise of the book, that's the politics, prophecy, and the supernatural. This prophetic fulfillment will then trigger the supernatural, but I'm getting a little bit ahead of myself, and I want to linger a little bit more on the prophetic and what we're going to see in the Middle East. This war, I believe, will be a two-prong attack. I believe at the same time that the radical jihadists or radical elements of Muslims, or Islam rather, comes up against the land of unwalled villages, i.e. Israel, at the same moment that they do that attack, pull the trigger as it will, they will detonate in the United States of America between 2 and 20 suitcase nukes. Now you say, surely then, that's so bleak, that's so dark, and yet what we see, and of course, Dr. Stan, this goes back into what you were talking about, like, you know, why does the United States stand up and cheer for Kosovo's independence? Well, it begs the question, who or what is really behind the scenes kind of yanking the strings? And if you don't believe me, here are two very interesting points. Why has Congress dawdled for 8 years since 9/11? Why have they dragged their feet? Why is the southern border completely porous, completely exposed? It is no different now than it was back then, number one. Two, why is the Afghan opium harvest the largest in 5 years after we've gone in there and supposedly got rid of the Taliban and Al-Qaeda and all this other nonsense? It's a bunch of nonsense, because we see that what's happening is the Afghans now have the largest bumper crop of opium in over 5 years. And that begs the question, who is profiting from this? Why haven't we gone in and just napalmed these fields and gotten rid of this bane to the entire human race? And it's unbelievable. So this, back on point here, when the Ezekiel 38-39 war, when this confederacy of Islamic nations go up against Israel, at the same time, they will pull the trigger here. And those 2 to 20 suitcase nukes, or live nukes, will be detonated. Now you say, surely, Lynn, you're making this up. Well, my sources for this come from ex-FBI agents and certain other books. One of them is called Al-Qaeda, Brotherhood of Terror. And the gentleman who wrote that book has done extensive research and has inside sources. And some of these sources that I had also, which I cannot name, talked about an operation called Operation Big Bird, which is detailed in Politics, Prophecy, and the Supernatural. But that talked about several Christmases ago. You may remember that most of the news media showed these tunnels that were large enough to drive a truck through, a small flatbed truck or a small like Toyota pickup truck, through these tunnels at the Mexican-U.S. border. And what this was a byproduct of us getting tipped off that someone, whether it was Al-Qaeda or another group, literally was smuggling in a live nuke. And so Operation Big Bird intercepted the live nuke. Now, the 6 o'clock news isn't going to run with this story, and, you know, Congress isn't going to, or President Bush isn't going to stand up and say, you know, by the way, we intercepted a live nuke at the border. That would cause incredible panic. The stock market would crash. You'd have mass pandemonium on your hands. So they can't say anything. But my sources, and I believe these sources, they're pretty reliable in my opinion, and some of that stuff is backed up, of course, with the collateral stories that we saw regarding it. But it's a two-prong attack that happens, and it happens simultaneously, where the radical jihadists attack Israel. They hit us at the same place. Israel at this point will have no other choice but to use its nuclear arsenal, and this, of course, moves us into chapter 38 of the prophetic of Ezekiel 38-39, where it describes what appears to be some sort of a nuclear exchange, where we see this Confederacy of Nations is literally decimated, where 6/7 of the army are completely wiped out, and only 1/7 remains. And Israel, at this point, somehow survived this. There's also a massive earthquake that happens. We also have this very, very intricate, detailed prophecy. And I got to tell your listeners that it's not like Nostradamus that says, you know, this figure like Hister, H-I-S-T-E-R, will rise up in the Rhine Valley. Well, Hister could be argued that it's a regional area in the Rhine Valley. It has nothing to do with Hitler. And by the way, it's off by several letters. So it's just a bum prophecy compared to the specificity of biblical prophecy, which tells us that the nations that are coming up against Israel, first of all, it names the nations, and then it tells us exactly what happens at this battle, and afterwards, there are 6 months where no one touches anything. No one touches any of the bones of the fallen army. And then they send out into the land people just to look. And wherever there's a bone or part of a body, they just put a marker. No one touches it. They just put a marker. And then even more specific, it says that in Ezekiel 39, in the prophecy, that then there's specific, specially trained, professional people that go out and take these bones and then bury them downwind from Israel, down by the region of the Dead Sea, in a mass grave. Now, that to me sounds like, and I'm not stretching here, I mean, it sounds like, you know, why not just pick up the bone? Why do we need special people to handle it? It sounds like and speaks of, in my opinion, some sort of a nuclear exchange. And I'm not the only one who's read this in light of nuclear weapons that we have. But remember, when this was penned 2,500 years ago, Ezekiel had no idea what he was looking at. He only saw, like the prophet Joel, the plague that struck the horses and the riders, where their tongues just were melted in their mouths, their eye sockets melted, while they were standing, which, of course, what a neutron bomb would do to a person. It would just, as you would stand there, your eyes would just literally liquidate, and all your soft tissue just liquidate right off your body, just like that, in an instant. So these prophets were seeing these things, and, of course, had no paradigm, nothing in their vernacular, to express them. So they express them in the best ways that they possibly can. But I find Ezekiel 38-39 extremely telling, very, very specific, and certainly this whole thing is shaping up. Now, where it goes from here, this, I believe, remember, the current political landscape is in direct correlation to supernatural events that happened in some cases millennia ago. And these supernatural events, like we talked about in the first part of the program, has shaped the body politic in all these countries and causes the tensions that we see in the world today. This is going, in my opinion, is setting a stage for the fulfillment of ancient biblical prophecies, which I just got done talking about, specifically 37, 38, and 39 of Ezekiel. These things, these fulfillments of these prophecies, then, I believe, will trigger the supernatural. And this supernatural, Dr. Stan, is unlike anything we have ever seen before. We're getting glimpses of it, in pockets of it, and I'll get into that in a little bit, what I think this thing is, and where I think the Luciferian endgame is going, and what the coming great deception is. And, you know, and we'll talk about that. Hopefully we'll have time to touch on it. But the bottom line is this, that when 2 Thessalonians tells us very specifically that Satan comes with all signs and lying wonders, that begs the question, in my opinion, that, you know, what has he gotten in his arsenal that is so much that, in Jesus' words, even the elect would be deceived if that were possible. So for Jesus to say something like that even the elect would be deceived if that were possible, for Paul to write that Satan comes with all signs and lying wonders, church is asleep. The church has looked at this passage, kind of yawned and turned the page, and it doesn't realize the danger that we are in, because this deception, is, in my opinion, will be so great that it will cause the great falling away, which 2 Thessalonians talks about. Remember, Paul says that man of sin, i.e. the Antichrist, will not be revealed until the great falling away, the apostasy happens, and then the man of sin is revealed. So it begs the question, what event could cause a great falling away? Why, as a Christian, would my faith then be shaken to the core, to the very core beliefs of what I hold dear to? What event could cause me to turn away and deliberately leave the faith? And, of course, this triggers the supernatural. And in understanding the supernatural events that are manifesting on the planet today, I believe we get a glimpse of the Luciferian endgame, and it's not pretty. And it's the coming deception, and the church is completely asleep.
And, Chris, we saw what happened in Germany after the Second World War, when there was a tremendous turning away from God, and, of course, the churches there are empty to this day, and throughout most of Europe. Why? Because they'd been told by their ministers that they were going to be raptured away before anything bad happened. They were promised that nothing would happen to them, and then, of course, they saw the horror that came, and they saw their cities in rubble, and I saw them after the Second World War. I was stationed in Mainz in Frankfurt as a military officer, and of course, really, if some major cataclysmic event came to America, an awful lot of Christians who were sure that nothing bad would ever happen to them, that God would never allow it, I think they were going to lose their faith. I really do.
And I, unfortunately, agree with you. And what's interesting is that there are two types of people that I talk to. And there's the people that will listen to the message, at least with open ears, and receive it. And then there's the other kind of person that just goes, you know, and they won't, you know, it's doom and gloom, you know, you're broad brushing here, these things aren't going to happen, and yet there's 25 pages of footnotes in Politics, Prophecy, and the Supernatural backing up point by point, bullet point by bullet point, connecting the dots to the political and to the prophetic and then the supernatural. And, you know, you may ask yourself, well, what is manifesting on the planet today? There's one event which supersedes everything, every other supernatural event on this planet. And there's the bumper music.
All right, Father, I want you to give your telephone number. I want you to give your website once again.
I'd love to. My phone number is 310-457-5564, 310-457-5564. And the website is Spiral of Life. Spiral like a spiral staircase, spiralofLife.com, spiralofLife.com.
And I can tell you it's a fascinating book. I've got it right here in my hand. And it's a, you know, as you begin to put this all together, you can't put it together unless you understand the supernatural. And believe me, of course, God is a God of miracles. But there are other forces out there that also have that supernatural capacity. And that's the very essence of the battle. We'll be back in a moment just to wrap up tonight's program here at Radio Liberty. Well, Lynn, you've got 3 minutes to wrap up the program.
Okay, great. Right now?
We'll go right ahead, yeah.
Okay, great. Thanks, Dr. Stan. So this almost an hour of discussion, and by the way, Dr. Stan, thanks for having me on. Really appreciate it. But all this to say that this is ramping up. The political landscape is setting the stage for the manifestation, or the fulfillment, I should say, of the prophetic, which then will trigger the manifestation of the supernatural. And I saved the best for last. What is the one event that is happening on the planet ongoing? There are 10,000 sightings of UFOs per year. Now, before you start laughing, you say, Lynn, you've lost your marbles. 10,000 sightings per year. 5,000 of them are recorded. Another 5,000 probably aren't because people are afraid of the ridicule. We have, for instance, last summer, a 3-mile-wide craft sighted by 2 different pilots over the English Channel, reported by other witnesses. We've got a mile-wide craft very recently in Stevensville, Texas, okay? We've got discs which are seen all over the planet and reported by hundreds and hundreds of different people. And what you need to understand, what people need to understand, is that this is the coming great deception. This is the one event which can change people's worldview and do it just in an instant. Remember, Book of Revelation tells us that there'll be a one-world religious system and a one-world government. How the heck are you going to get 1.5 or 1.7 billion Christians to shift their worldview? How are you going to get 1.2 Muslims to shift their worldview? When the extraterrestrial finally reveals itself, and of course what I mean by extraterrestrial is nothing more than the machinations of Satan, the whole thing is one big great deception. They will come and they will say, we genetically manipulated you thousands of years ago. We are your progenitors. We will show you who God is. Now, there's 25 pages of footnotes in my book. I back this stuff up from all different sources. You can check my sources. You can do your own research. And you will see that I believe this is the coming great deception. And the fulfillment of prophecy in the Middle East, I believe, will trigger these supernatural events. But Jesus himself says that men faint from fear of things coming on the earth. Satan comes with all signs and lying wonders. The church is asleep. But what do we see beginning to manifest all over the planet? We see the emergence of this extraterrestrial, this UFO, this alien gospel, which is, we created you, we'll show you who God is, we will be your saviors. And of course, they'll come right in here, right after this nuclear exchange in the Middle East, and they'll say, hey, you know, you guys can't do this, we're here to mediate, and we're going to create the new age. And this is where this whole thing is going. And of course, from this will rise the Antichrist. And it's this is another 3-hour conversation we can
have. We'll have to do that another night. We'll get you back on again real soon for this audience. That's Lynn Marzulli. God bless. Good night, Lynn.
Good night, Dr. Stan. Bye-bye. Thanks for having me on.
Well, this is Dr. Stan. We hope that you enjoyed Lynn Marzulli, and of course his book, A Politics, Prophecy, and the Supernatural, is fascinating, and we recommend it to you. And of course, that website is spiralofLife.com. That's spiralofLife.com. Just think of the DNA chain as you see it there. And well worthwhile getting. If you have difficulty getting it, of course, you can always call us, and we'll give you the telephone number to call to get in touch with Lynn personally. There really is a supernatural battle that's taking place today. If you've not read my book, Brotherhood of Darkness, you need to get it. And certainly we also have my latest, one of my latest talks is entitled The Forbidden Secret. And it will tell you this secret that's been passed down through the ages by the sages, by the mystics, by the adepts, by the priests, by the shamans, by the medicine men, by all those who are tied into the other dimension. And of course, it is a secret about a supernatural power that you can tap into. But ladies and gentlemen, you don't want to tap into that power, let me tell you. And that's, of course, that's covered very well in my talk on the forbidden secret. And then we do hope that many of you will start making preparations for the very difficult times that lie ahead. They are coming. This evening on the evening news, they were talking about how the price of food is just going up. Let me tell you that wheat has recently gone to over $20 a barrel. It's gone up almost seven times in the last couple of years. And the price of soybeans, corn, literally everything is going up. And, of course, they keep telling you, they're lying to you, that there's only a 2% inflation, or maybe a 3 point inflation, maybe with fuel and food 4 point, and they're simply lying to you. But they do not dare tell the American people the truth about what's going on. And so if you read the Internet today, you'll find that the United Nations is talking about it may very well be necessary to ration food, not only in underdeveloped countries, but in developed countries throughout the world, because, of course, there's real food shortages developing. Of course, the bees are disappearing, and that means we'll have difficulty getting fruits and vegetables. Certainly, we're finding that there are other problems as far as the weather is concerned. The crops are failing in Australia because of the drought there. The rice crop, the wheat crop, one of the large wheat producers, is not producing. There's about, you know, 50 days of wheat. That's all we have on stored for the entire world today, 50 days of wheat. Understand that we, if you've read the Ephesians 6:8, and you'll find the prophecy that basically tells us that there's going to be great famine in the land, and there's going to be great problems in the land. So if you'd like, of course, to get more information on preparation, give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. If you'd like a health catalog, if you'd like a regular catalog, if you'd like an emergency food and an emergency supply catalog. And if you have not made your preparations for the difficult times, do you know how to store large amounts of water? Do you have the containers for it? If you have barrels, do you know how to get it out? Do you need to have pumps to get it out? Do you have something to purify your water, like a Berkey water purifier? Do you have, you know, long-term storage food laid in? Because believe me, the prices are going up to the roof. We're in touch with the people who prepare it for ready reserve foods, and they're having increasingly difficulty getting the food to prepare. Right now, you can go to the grocery store, and there's plenty of food. But what happens if you went to the grocery store and there wasn't anything there? What would you do? What would you do if they suddenly just announced they were going to begin to ration food? Because, of course, people were starving in Africa and in Asia. This is not imaginary. You can go up on the Internet and look about the thoughts of famine and food shortages and check it out. The United Nations announced today they're thinking of possibly having to ration food throughout the world in the very near future. You're going to have to look after yourself, ladies and gentlemen. Believe me, there's not going to be any shortage of food in the White House or in Dick Cheney's homes, but there may very well be in your home. And then, of course, our number 1-800-544-8927. And then please pray for America. Pray for revival. Pray for our leaders and our ministers. But please pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision and protection, because we're on the front lines of this truly spiritual battle for the souls of men and the survival of Christian civilization. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that'll determine what the future will bring. And I have to remind you, the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, and, well, for the next hour, they're going to be the views of Bob Fletcher. And Bob's a good friend who's done a lot of great research. We carry a number of his DVDs and videos. He has an excellent one on UFOs. He's got one on the going to the background of the murder of John Fitzgerald Kennedy. He's got one on weather modification. Certainly, he's got one on the strange death of Sonny Bono. And Bob, how are you doing tonight?
I'm all right, so to speak, I guess. As good as can be expected. It's good to be here, though.
Well, it's always good to have you, and certainly Bob's done a lot of fundamental research, and of course, we're fortunate to have him. He's done a lot of investigation. He's testified before the various committees of Congress and the various bodies of Congress. And so, but we thought maybe tonight we'd talk about the murder of John Fitzgerald Kennedy. Now, why was he murdered? Why did Lee Harvey Oswald murder him? And then why did Jack Ruby murder Lee Harvey Oswald? And they've never tried to get to the bottom of this. They appointed a commission, the Warren Commission. Three of the seven members of the Warren Commission were Masons. Four of the members of the Warren Commission were actually came from the Council on Foreign Relations. They weren't going to give us an opportunity to find out what really happened. Of course, J. Edgar Hoover had to cover up what was going on because he was deeply involved in this. His job was to not reveal what happened, but to conceal what happened, and the same with the Central Intelligence Agency. They could never let the American people know the truth about what happened, and so they told us, Jack Ruby, of course, didn't know Lee Harvey Oswald. There was no relationship between them, but Jack Ruby, he saw a sign. And it said, it was put up by the John Birch Society. It said, impeach or Warren. And he was so upset by that sign, he decided to kill Lee Harvey Oswald. Or he wanted to kill Lee Harvey Oswald because he didn't want Jackie Kennedy to have to go through the tragedy of a trial for Lee Harvey Oswald. And if you believe any of these stories, you've got to be incredibly naive. Well, recently, of course, there's been some information that's come up simply within the last week or so. Evidence that the Harvey Oswald and Jack Ruby knew one another, or they knew one another very well. It appeared in the media one day and then suddenly never to be heard of again. Pick up the story there, Bob.
Of course, that's amazing. That's part of the real problem we have, and that is, which of course you speak about all the time, and that is the unbelievable media control. And there's a lot of ways that can be done, and we won't have to get in. Not going to get into that this evening, but believe it or not, to the listeners, by placing people at certain positions, the media actually can be not only controlled but isolated. And I will get into it just a little bit, and that is to mention that a very close friend of mine for several years, and I believe she's passed on at this point in time, but she actually worked for Bill Casey, who was the head of the CIA and had been involved at the White House through a couple of presidential administrations. And, of course, she knew an awful lot about an awful lot. And she had told me one time, I actually asked her, how in the world something can go on in Los Angeles and not show up in the news on the East Coast the same as it does in Los Angeles. How does that happen, and how could they possibly do that? Because I was skeptical as to how that might possibly happen. I just don't know how. I couldn't figure it out. And she told me that basically the CIA had placed people at high levels in the United Press International and Associated Press.
Hold that thought. We'll be back in just a moment. Go right ahead, Bob.
And she had said that, in fact, they had placed let's say, at the executive and management level, let's say the editorial level, of some of or all of the biggest news media in the United States, and it had taken them like 20 years to get all of the people in line and get everything in a manageable condition. And what they can do, actually, is something can take place in Los Angeles, for example, and it's up to single person or two or three people whether that goes on the line and gets out and becomes national news. And it is more, at this point in time, it's actually a computer button. They either press a button and puts it on out there, or they press it for limited exposure, or they can press the button and have it not show up at all. So what had happened over many years, they've slowly infiltrated at the management level of the news media. So you actually do have, or it is set up now in the country, that if there's something that they want to curtail, they can do it. And if they want to make it a big deal, and maybe it's a stupid little story as a diversion, they certainly can put that out too. And that kind of answered the question as to how in the world this kind of a thing could take place, because I couldn't figure it out. She simply said at the highest level of the international press desks and the editorial desks, they're able to just either say yes or no whether a story gets out and goes every place. So what we had, which you mentioned here about 10 days ago, the Dallas, Texas County District Attorney released about 15 boxes of documents and miscellaneous items, that a couple of which belong to some to Lee Harvey Oswald, some to that belong to Jack Ruby, etc. And what was most important was a couple of transcripts that seemed to show the connection of Oswald to Ruby, and they were actually said to have been discussing the potential assassination of John F. Kennedy prior to the event taking place. And now they made a big deal of this for about one day, and of course then as you indicated, it just disappeared. But the material that we had come across, myself and my staff.
I'm going to have to ask you to hold that thought. We'll be back in just a moment with Bob Fletcher. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and certainly Bob was saying that the way that they are able to control the media here in this country is that the CIA has people planted in the major news services, AP, UP, other wire services, and probably in many of the major places where the information gets out. Now, certainly, where can you verify that? Well, if you want to, there's a wonderful book. It's called Fixing Intelligence. It's written by Lieutenant General William Odom. That's Lieutenant General William Odom, and he, for many years, was in charge of the most secret of all the secret organizations in America, even far more secret than the CIA. The NSA, sometimes referred to as the No Such Agency, but actually the National Security Administration. And William Odom is in charge of that. Now, he's a good patriot, but he signed all sorts of secrecy agreements, so he can't come out and tell you what they're doing. But in this book, he does ask questions like, should the CIA be assassinating people? Should the CIA have their agents planted in the media? Should the CIA have their agents planted in the media? Which is exactly what Bob Fletcher is saying. And of course, Bob was recently mentioning that just within the last week or so, why the district attorney there and or somebody working in Dallas had released a number of boxes of material they had going back to the time of the Kennedy assassination, and there were some transcripts there, supposedly, where Lee Harvey Oswald and Jack Ruby were talking about the assassination of President Kennedy. I can't help but wonder if maybe some of these transcripts were there to deceive us, because I do not believe that for one minute that Lee Harvey Oswald killed the President of the United States. But you pick up the story. Let's hear what you have to say about it.
Sure. Well, we had a couple years back, I had gotten a video and also some other information. But the video was Zapruder's tape, the old one that we've seen a million times. But it was sent to me through an intelligence agent, and at that time that I had gotten it, actually many years ago, the time that I received it, it was had been run through a rather advanced computerization that the intelligence community had, and of course it showed almost, I mean, you could almost see the bullet in the air kind of a thing. It was very it was inch by inch, frame by frame kind of a thing. That nowadays, of course, anybody can do that with a good computer. But back when I first got this, which I believe was in 88 or 89, it was pretty much special kind of equipment. So the video that I had gotten, and along with a few other bits and pieces, it was things that nobody else had ever seen. And I almost felt compelled to go ahead and do a full video report on what I had. So I went and through other contacts, including agents and what have you, and spending a tremendous amount of time with going through a specialized video log, video depositories, and old news footage, as well as other bits and pieces. We put together our report, and and some of it fits completely in to the brand new material just released from the Dallas Police Department. And what do I mean by that? Well, I located, for example, two or three women, one that had worked in Oswald's bar, or two that had worked in one of his the Carousel Lounge.
No, is that Oswald or Ruby?
I'm sorry. Yes, this is, no, I'm referring to Ruby. Right. That's right. I'm referring to Ruby and a couple of the women that actually worked for Ruby in his Carousel Lounge, and that they had actually sat at the table and handed drinks and had participated even in part of the conversation between Oswald and Ruby prior to the murder of Kennedy, and they were talking about shooting Kennedy. They were, you know, right, so to speak, out in public, at least doing it to themselves secretively, but it was in Jack Ruby's Carousel Lounge. So they had been put together by these people, two or three people that had come forward several years ago, and I have that on video. And then you had Jack Ruby's bizarre connection to Richard Nixon. And Richard Nixon, apparently, when he was many years ago, and I believe it was 47, that's going way back, or in the 50s, when Nixon was still a district attorney and a prosecuting attorney, I believe in the state of Pennsylvania, may have been up around Chicago, I'm not sure, but I'm thinking it's Pennsylvania. But Ruby was actually working on the side for him as a mob informant, working for Richard Nixon. And, of course, you get to say, wow, gee, that's pretty amazing, but that's not a big deal. But what is a big deal, that, in fact, Nixon stepped in between congressional investigations and Jack Ruby, and his name was Rubenstein at that time, and Rubenstein was pulled out of the committee so that he was not obligated to testify in public. And what had happened was Nixon said to the committee behind closed doors, listen, this guy's been working for me, he's been good for me for a long time, he's connected to the mob, he's been blowing the whistle under the table, supplying us as a stool pigeon information, so leave him alone, I want to get him out of town, get him disappeared. And that was the extent of it. But they had that close a connection. Now, I'm going to draw the importance of that later on, is the fact that, so Ruby now moves down to the New Orleans area, sets up a mob-connected, mob-associated nightclub. So they kind of controlled all of them along the strip at that time anyhow. And he set up this club down there. Now, much later on, we have One of, in which we get into much more detail on this that I won't do right now, but in our reports we covered, a fellow named Frank Sturgis. Frank Sturgis was a hitman for the CIA and generally a kind of a hired gun, so to speak. And he was one of the guys that also worked for Richard Nixon and was arrested and did time as one of the burglars at the Watergate break-in that was such a big deal that actually ended up bringing down Richard Nixon from the presidency.
But that was long after the Kennedy assassination.
This was long after. Well, now the point of bringing this up is that Frank Sturgis was also arrested as one of the hobos at the scene of the assassination.
You're talking about he was one of the hobos on the grassy hill.
That they arrested. Right. Actually, they arrested him up on the top of near where the railroad cars were, and that was fairly close to the grassy knoll.
Right.
Along with E. Howard Hunt and a few other scurrilous characters of the CIA assassin team. By the way, they had an assassin team, two or three teams, that had gone around the world on the behalf of the National Security and the CIA, and of course had carried out a variety of assassinations worldwide, different dignitaries and people like that. But to get back to this, see, there's a strange link here with Nixon. I also discovered that Richard Nixon and Vice President Johnson, the day before the assassination, secretly met on a ranch in Texas. And they met with E. Howard Hunt and a few other people that of CIA assassination background. They met on a ranch. Now, along with that, there was a public meeting, not public, but somewhat public. There was a meeting of Pepsi-Cola bottlers in Texas there at that same day, or the day before the assassination. And Nixon and Johnson were involved with that, and other people at that public meeting. So, and of course, people always say, "Ah, well, you can't prove that." Well, yes, I can prove it, because I was able to discover actual live newsreel footage where the announcer shows their arrival into Dallas the day before the murder, and has Johnson and Nixon on the newsreel, and they discuss it. All right. So when the people come back and say, "Well, you can't prove it," and Richard Nixon always said, "If you can believe this," Nixon said he didn't remember where he was when Kennedy was murdered. Well, where he was Dallas, Texas, and it's absolutely proven. We have the footage, and we have that on our investigation that we did several years ago.
Now, is that all on the footage of the videos that we
have? It's all on the video that we have on the Kennedy assassination.
Right.
What we also put on our DVD, now it's available on DVD, but we also were able to put on there, it was a couple of amazing discoveries. I have live film footage of Jack Ruby talking after he was captured, after he was grabbed up, and he was in jail for a couple of days after the Oswald murder. Ruby actually discussing one thing that right out of his mouth, and this is on live video, or at that time was actually a film, on live news film footage. He was discussing the New World Order, which blew me right off of my chair when I saw that, because what he says is the America has to be aware there will be a brand new form of government will be put upon the Americans in the future, and its murder of Kennedy was part of it. And we actually have that on video also.
There's some video down there at the where in Dallas, you know, with a special area that they have where they talk about these things, where they have Jack Ruby talking to the members of the Warren Commission, saying, "Get me out of here and I'll tell you the real truth. Get me out of here and I'll tell you the real truth."
Right. And the footage that we have actually was taken loosely. This was not at the committee.
Hold that, we'll be right back.
Sure.
All right, go right ahead, Bob.
This particular footage was taken, as a matter of fact, in the jail, and while he was being transported, like, from one cell to another, where he was mumbling these things out to the reporters, and it was caught, you know, live. It was not something that was a formal meeting at all. He was actually shooting off his mouth. And he said that also that the murder went all the way up to the very highest levels of our own government.
He actually made that statement there.
That's live on our tape. It certainly is. And then also we were able to discover what might appear to be a simple, non-important point on the one hand, but it actually is, in the last 45 years, it is the only proof, absolute proof, that it was more than one shooter, therefore it was a conspiracy, and that is the discovery of two bullet holes in the windshield of the limousine. So what we have is one bullet hit on the very top stainless steel frame of the open vehicle, actually the front windshield frame. One bullet hit there. That would have come from the back of the vehicle, from behind the vehicle. Another one, which I believe came from the front, hits the windshield and does like a spider web shattering, because you have to remember it would have been bulletproof glass on the windshield, even though they had the top off. Obviously, the bulletproof glass doesn't help you when you got the top off of the limo. But he had two bullets in the windshield. That other bullet, if it came from the front, which is my what I expect, the bullet from the front would have come from the railroad overpass, because that's where it would have been aimed directly to get a shot from someplace up on the railroad. Now, what we also have, and I don't have it on my particular report because I didn't get my hands onto it until later on, but what I do have is a lady named Maria Lorenz. Now, she is on my DVD stating, in fact, that that Frank Sturgis had told her that he had been involved with the murder. Now, Frank Sturgis also admitted it to a whole variety of people on his deathbed. About 10 years ago, he died at the age of 75, and one of the last things he said was his admission that he was involved with killing Kennedy. Now, this Maria Lorenz was a female Central Intelligence agent. She was a girlfriend of Frank Sturgis. Again, that's the guy connected to Nixon. And she was a girlfriend. She said, he said to her, after the murder, he said, "We killed Kennedy." And she actually had flown or driven up from Miami to New Orleans, or to Dallas. I believe she stopped, went through New Orleans, and then into Dallas from Miami, and had brought the weapons up and supplied him, dropped the rifles, a handful of special rifles, two or three, whatever they were, and dropped them off to Frank Sturgis in Dallas. And she was, later on, she said, "You mean that that's what those weapons were for, the ones that I brought to you?" And he said, "Yes." And she actually also, she was a CIA agent. And interesting, as a sidebar, this lady, Maria Lorenz, was actually, had been sent down and was Fidel Castro's girlfriend for a while.
Hold that thought. We'll be right back here in just a moment with Bob Fletcher. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Bob's got an awful lot of great information. A lot of this is on the DVD that we carry, a video that we carry on the Kennedy assassination that he put out, and talking about a woman named Maria Lorenzo, who has come forward now and admitted that Frank Sturgis, the day after the Kennedy assassination, Frank Sturgis, a member working for the CIA, close to Nixon, had said, you know, "We killed Kennedy," and she'd even brought the weapons up. She didn't know she was bringing up the weapons that were going to be used to kill the president, but she'd brought the weapons up from Florida and given them to Frank Sturgis. So, and then, of course, she was also a very attractive woman. Apparently, the CIA had sent her down to get close to Fidel Castro. You pick up the story there, Bob.
Right, and again, it's just an interesting sidebar, but this shows you how I must use the term heavily important this particular lady was. She was not just some barfly, let's say, shooting off her mouth. She actually had been sent down, had befriended Fidel Castro many years ago, and she was one that had attempted to carry out one of the Central Intelligence assassinations of Castro, which they're always talking about. You know, they're always talking about how many times they tried to bump him off, you know, over his 50 years as a dictator, and I guess they eventually just gave up, because he was also, not only was he reasonably sharp, I guess, in terms of being aware of things, he also is the luckiest guy in the world, because in the story that Maria Lorenz talks about, she had put cyanide in the toothpaste tube. She had a toothpaste tube supplied, I said that incorrectly, it was actually supplied to her by the CI, of course, and it had cyanide in it. Had Fidel Castro brushed his teeth with it, it would have been the end of him. And she had had the ability, she slipped it in, put it into his the cabinet in his bathroom, and replaced the other toothpaste tube with the poison one. Castro picked it up, was wandering around with a toothbrush in one hand, the toothpaste tube in the other, and he dropped it before using it. He dropped it, and when he dropped it on the floor, he stepped on it. And it accidentally, of course, shot all of the toothpaste out of the tube. He picked it up, of course, and threw it in the trash and went and got another tube of toothpaste.
Because you can't help but wonder if maybe he knew what was in that.
Well, of course, you don't know. But like I say, he either one of two things, because we tried many other operations to remove him, and through the, you know, the CI and probably a couple other agencies. But the bottom line was, and apparently, I believe, actually, Ms. Maria Lorenz was actually there, you know, and witnessed it, that, in fact, he just dropped it and stepped on it while walking across the bathroom or the bedroom or whatever. And fortunately for him, he was, like I say, the luckiest dictator in the world. He's still down there, so I guess he certainly must be fortunate.
I wonder how they, I mean, if you stop and think of it, though, Bob, you know, ordinarily if you drop something, you don't then step on it.
Well, he was walking, see. I mean this was, you know, who knows? This is the story. It's possible that he figured it out or knew. I don't think so, because he never did anything towards Maria, and he would have known, you know, would have had to have been her that put it in there. That's, I think, the point, that, you know, he never said anything. He just, you know, uh-oh, he just walking with it in one hand while he was walking. He dropped it, and the next foot down before he got a chance, and stepped on the darn thing, and he threw it in the trash, and that was the end of it. But I don't think he knew, I guess, is what I'm saying, because this Maria Lorenz would have been in serious trouble, and apparently he didn't even react. He just threw it in the trash. And
All right, go ahead. We'll go ahead with this.
Anyhow, but we do have statements of her live that she did several years ago. We have those on our DVD and our expose. And I have to also say that I'm pretty sure that we were able to track down the person who was on the grassy knoll, I'm just about positive that it was a fellow named Roscoe White. Roscoe White, as a matter of fact, was actually connected also to Oswald in the Marines originally. He was involved with something to do with Oswald, and he was, I believe, the guy up on the little knoll there. Everybody called him Badge Man. He looked like he was dressed in some kind of a uniform. And Roscoe White was, in fact, a uniformed police officer placed on the Dallas police force ahead of time to carry out the assassination.
All right, we're going to be back here in just a moment with Bob Fletcher, going into his research on the Kennedy assassination. Ladies and gentlemen, there are a lot of stories out there, but one thing is sure, and that is, of course, we haven't been told the truth, and Bob's got a lot of great footage. Well, this is Dr. Stan, our guest this evening, Bob Fletcher, who's really done a lot of personal investigating and then put together a fascinating video. Now, we have his other videos, the one on UFOs, the one on weather modification. We think those are so important, and now we're talking about, of course, his DVD or video on the Kennedy assassination. So pick the story up, Bob.
Well, and unfortunately, of course, Stan, we're never going to get a clear picture. It's all over. It's been too long now, so we're never going to get that final clear picture of who did what and when. But it's important that people that people understand the interfacing and the interconnections between characters that were absolutely involved with this in one way or another. And it's mind-boggling. You can't even. It's so convoluted in terms of the connections between people that if you try to write it out, draw it on a piece of paper, and like into a graph or a chart or something, you just couldn't do it. It would just look like a giant spider web of connecting lines. But this fellow, Roscoe White, was in naval intelligence. He had been involved, like I say, I believe he was in the Marines originally with Oswald, and off the top of my head, I can't give you the exact, I don't know if he was in boot camp or what, but there was a direct connection between the two. He had been placed on the Dallas police force in advance there, and what had happened was his son, many years after 10 years, 15 years after Kennedy's assassination, Roscoe White died in some strange industrial fire. And when I say strange, it was one of these fires where the people that were caught in this fire, and Roscoe White was one, was totally just burned to a total crisp. You know, something you couldn't identify with anything. I mean, they wouldn't even have been able to have gotten DNA out of what was left. And so it's one of those questions of maybe it was him and maybe it wasn't. But accordingly, his son had gone and found in his left property after his death, he had found a footlocker filled with a bunch of stuff, which included a complete diary of Roscoe White explaining who he had killed and what he had done on the behalf of the agency. It showed that not only that he admitted being the guy on the grassy knoll.
Hold that thought. We're going to be back here in just a moment. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and of course, Bob is telling us that when Roscoe White died in a rather unusual fire some years later, his son then went through his materials in a footlocker. He found a diary where Roscoe White had listed all of the men he had killed while working for the Central Intelligence Agency. And pick up the story. What did he say about the murder of Kennedy?
Well, and he included in this, as a matter of fact, many of those strange witnesses that were killed or murdered or had accidents. There was like 120 connected witnesses that died, you know, after the assassination. He actually named 5 or 10 of these that he was involved in killing. That was included in the diary. And then also included in the diary was some top secret communiques in sort of a coded language, but instructing him to stay there until the time was right, not to quit the Dallas police force until they gave him the high sign, and to stay in there, et cetera, et cetera. Now, those particular pieces of paper, communiques, we have also shown live on our DVD, so that a person could actually read this paperwork yourself. But this is what places him on the police force, and et cetera.
Who has the diary? The
diary, of course, this is and this is one of these things that you right away you realize was a mistake. But the son, of course, not knowing A from B, being an average guy, not knowing any of the intricacies of this thing, he took the diary to the FBI. Okay, so So I know what you're saying in your mind right away, and anybody that's that's sharp enough realizes right away. You go, oh no. Anyhow, he passes on to the FBI, thinking he was doing the right thing. And of course, at this point in time, Puff the Magic Dragon, that diary has vanished, and so it's gone. I'll never see that again. And it was like I say, he physically took it into the FBI, figured he was doing the right thing, and of course, it's gone.
Well, no, of course, would that be the FBI archives or the National Archives?
No, it's just gone. It's gone. It vanished, is what I'm saying. He took it to the right to the regular to the local agency, probably in, I'm going to guess, in Dallas. But he took it to some FBI agent, probably wherever it was that this Roscoe White's home was, and I don't remember. I think it was in Texas someplace. But nonetheless, the point is, he hand-carried it to the FBI, took it into an agent. They gave him a receipt for it, I guess, or maybe they didn't. I don't even know about that. But the bottom line was, he never saw it again. Of course, they told him they would get it back to him when they were done copying it. And it's stupidest thing the guy ever did, and he realizes it. But the bottom line is that diary is gone. But these interesting little communications weren't. He kept those, and we do have those included on the report. But here's another, again, one of these sidebars. This Roscoe White, not only being connected with Oswald and being a sniper involved with one of the military hit teams, he also, his wife was a dancer in Ruby's Club in New Orleans, or in Texas, one or the other. So, again, it's this convoluted mixture of characters here where they're all interfaced together in one manner or another. Every time you find a guy over here on the right hand that was involved with it, you look back, you'll find out that he's totally connected to Oswald or to Ruby or to one person or another there. I'm pretty positive, according to other investigations that have been done, I'm dead positive, that Barry Seal, the infamous intelligence agent slash drug smuggler that dealt out of, that worked so easily under Bill Clinton's governorship in Arkansas, smuggling the drugs by the billions of dollars, that he actually flew a small plane out of the Dallas airport there, and actually apparently probably was the getaway plane for at least a couple of the people that were involved with the shooter team.
In fact, we even have a book on Barry Seal called Barry and the Boys. He was a CIA operative tied into George Herbert Walker Bush and made literally hundreds of millions of dollars smuggling drugs and didn't do him any good. They set him up to be assassinated, and he was assassinated.
Yeah, one of the...
He knew too much.
And directly connected with George Bush, so connected to George Bush that when he was machine-gunned to death in New Orleans... In the front seat of his Cadillac by some hit team from someplace, George Bush's private telephone number was in the business card in his pocket.
Now, that was George Herbert Walker Bush, not
yes,
the president.
Yes, it's George Bush
number one.
George Bush Sr., right, number 41, President 41.
Well, remember, of course, he'd come from the CIA. He'd been the director of the Central Intelligence Agency, and just as in Russia, usually, of course, your dictator comes from the KGB. So
and
in the United States, our president came from the Central Intelligence Agency, the counterpart of the KGB.
Absolutely, yes. As a matter of fact, he was involved, obviously. I'm pretty positive he was an agent at a fairly high level himself, which he's always denied being an agent prior to getting involved as the director. He denied being an on-the-ground agent earlier, but he was involved with putting together the three ships that were masquerading, that were part of the invasion for the Bay of Pigs. And he was directly involved with that, because the three ships, one was named Houston, and one was named Barbara, and one was named Zapata.
Right, because Zapata was his oil company.
Right, and he's still, even with the names of those three ships, he was still denying that he was an agent during that period of time, and of course that was way back in 1960 and 61 when the failed Bay of Pigs took place. But again, it's interesting. They, like they say, just this last week they bring up this new miscellaneous information, and they try to the connection again between Ruby, Jack Ruby, and Lee Harvey Oswald indicated on papers that they just brought to the surface, and we have several different connecting points in the DVD that we finished on the Kennedy assassination that, for the most part, I would say goes hand in hand with the new material that's come out. Even though with this new material, instantly you had people that were saying, oh, well, even though this, we just discovered this and it's very clear and all this, it looks like actually you know, notes relative to a meeting or possibly a transcript of a audio recording is what it might have been. Actually, somebody may have been recording, may have been Ruby himself recording the meetings, but nonetheless, you have people that came out the day after that material was exposed a few weeks ago, and they said, oh, that was probably baloney. That's probably just some information because some guy was going to write a movie and all of that. So they poo-pooed the information. I did not see anybody get in touch with me and say, hey, how does that connect with all the stuff that you've got and that you discovered a couple years ago? If they had done that, it certainly would have turned it into a different atmosphere as to how good this new material might be. But as far as I'm concerned, there's no question that Oswald and Jack Ruby knew each other, and it appears that it was literally a mob-connected obligation for Ruby to kill Oswald. And and how that works, et cetera, I don't know. You have to really get into the mindset of the people involved, and potentially there were mobsters involved with this.
Well, of course, really, there's a book called Double Cross, which was written by Chuck Giancano, the brother of Sam Giancano, who was the godfather of the mafia at that time. And basically, Chuck Giancano said the reason that Jack Ruby killed Oswald is he was ordered to.
Right.
He was told if he didn't, he would be tortured to death, and everybody in his family would be tortured to death. And when you get an offer like that from the head of the mafia, it's an offer you can't refuse. An order,
right?
You can't refuse.
And I absolutely believe that. I think that's exactly the mindset. It's a little hard for the average person to perceive that, but in my lifetime and the variety of things that I've done and the investigations I've carried out, I have known mobsters, I have met mobsters, and I understand the mindset a little better than someone that maybe never did, had that experience, and that is absolutely no question that it is the mindset of a deeply planted person in the mob. If they are ordered to do it, they do it regardless of the ramifications.
And of course, if anybody wants to check this story, it comes from a book called Double Cross by Chuck Giancano. We used to carry it, but it's out of print now. We don't have it anymore.
And by the way, that book also goes deeply into the Barry Seal drug smuggling business as well, if I'm not mistaken. And I'm thinking it's the same book. Very good, extremely interesting. Barry Seal, by the way, something that I also got my hands on many years ago, which by itself doesn't mean anything, but when you put it together with other things, during the Iran-Contra mess, which, by the way, I was a federal witness in that case and another case directly related with the Iran-Contra business. I was a witness in that case, and
wasn't that how you got all involved in this?
That was how
somebody
that's right. That's how I originally got into this whole mess. and that's way back in 1987.
Well, they were using your business as a front for this
right,
sort of anti-counter business.
That's correct, and so I was a victim first, and then a witness, and then an investigator. To get back to what I was going to say, talking about?
You were talking about Iran-Contra.
Well, yes, okay, excuse me, Barry Seal and the Iran-Contra. Barry Seal, they had, the CI had machine gun pistols, fully automatic machine gun pistols, specially manufactured for themselves by a company called Parcometer, or let me put it this way, they manufactured some of the mechanism for machine gun pistols for the Iran-Contra use. It was done through Oliver North, obviously, and Barry Seal, though, here we have this multi-million dollar, actually it may even have been to the billions, drug smuggler functioning out of Arkansas, and companies there manufacturing machine guns for the CIA, or whomever you want to call it, whatever agency it was at that time, for the Contra use, full automatic pistols, and a guy that's a drug smuggler goes in, and he's the guy that made the order. He dropped off the order to the company. He dropped off the drawings and the sketches and put together the contract on the behalf of the CIA. And when he came back, he picked up the parts. These are machine gun parts, right? He picks up the machine gun parts made in Arkansas and gives the purchase order from the Central Intelligence Agency to pay for the parts. And actually, so here you, well, my point obviously being here, you have one of the biggest infamous drug smugglers in the United States hand carrying in the purchase order to pick up the machine guns at their machine gun parts at the company in Arkansas.
Course, I think one of the most interesting things is, of course, Barry Seal, who was obviously working with or for the CIA. Was this drug smuggler. And of course,
he was a CIA agent. I think he was an agent first, as a matter of fact, because it goes way back to, I have information on him going way, way back to when he was, matter of fact, in the Civil Air Patrol as a teenager in New Orleans, and guess what? Alongside of Oswald.
They were both, of course, in the Civil Air Patrol.
They were in the Civil Air Patrol together. Again, this is where we get back to that convoluted little mixture. It's the same guys. You know, you have 10 or 15 people, you draw a circle around their names, and they'll be on every single page of the book, and over a period of, like, 30 years, carrying out covert operations, which also are many of them criminal or directly overlapping with the most flagrant criminal activities in the history of America, and they were intelligence agents, the whole bunch of them.
Wasn't Ferry a part of that as well?
Excuse me?
Ferry, there's a fellow named
Yes,
Ferry.
Absolutely. A fellow named Ferry, who was a strange little character, and in the Oliver Stone motion picture of JFK, he probably was the most standout character, was played by Joe Pesci. And it was this tiny little fellow that he had a strange disease where he had no hair on his body.
Right, no eyebrows.
Right, yeah, so he had no hair at all, any place on his body, none on his arms or his legs, did not have any hair on his head, had no eyebrows. So he used to paint on his eyebrows, like with a, you know, eyebrow pencil, like some kind of a whatever, and had a like a 29-cent hair piece. They said it was supposed to ridiculous thing. It looked like people that knew him said it was like a piece of a carpet that he used to wear on his head. It used to fall off all the time in the middle of a conversation. and he was really a strange one. And he was actually the recruiter for the intelligence agency at the Civil Air Patrol. And that's where Oswald was there, and Barry Seal. And they all started very early. And see, Oswald was a CIA agent. There's no question in my mind. That's why he went to Russia. And by the way, he worked on the U-2 aircraft in Turkey just prior to going on to Russia. You know, so he was, you know, I mean, people could say, oh, that jerk or that whatever. I mean, the guy spoke some Russian. I don't know how much, but he spoke enough. He married a Russian, the niece of a KGB agent, and which, of course, we got to meet her later on.
And, of course, then, of course, the government. Our government paid his way back from Russia after he defected there. And
oh, absolutely.
I mean, of course, the thing is, the story is just so full of holes. People have to understand that this whole thing was a setup, and, of course, he was, I think for years they were preparing him as a patsy for the assassination. And
or for something, anyhow, yes.
Then passing out tracts for the Fair Play for Cuba committee there in New Orleans. And, well, anyway, we're just about out of time. Our guest has been Bob Fletcher, and, of course, we've been talking about the Kennedy assassination. The DVD or the video, very informative, one of the best things that's ever been made, and the reason you haven't heard of it was, well, maybe you're not supposed to. We'll be back in just a moment to wrap up tonight's program. Well, Bob, you got 3 minutes to wrap up the program.
Well, again, this is kind of an old story we've been going over today, but a lot of new material. If people have that lingering interest and you haven't seen the DVD, I suggest they contact you and get a copy. Or if you would like to contact me, drop me a note relative to any of the materials we have, and that's Post Office Box 216, Bayview, Idaho, 83803. That's Bob Fletcher, Box 216, Bayview, Idaho, 83803. And sign off with one thing, I guess. Don't believe hardly anything that you hear, and then the rest of it you got to investigate.
Well, I think we're lucky to have people like Bob, who's been on the front lines of this and really knew a lot of the key people. In fact, he had talked to Sonny Bono about some of these things, and Sonny was going to launch an investigation just before he went on a skiing trip. And, of course, you remember that the strange death of Sonny Bono. It was the second key government official to die in a skiing accident by running into a tree within a couple of weeks. And
1 week.
1 week.
And of course, 5 days, 7 days.
And, of course, the people who knew Sonny knew that he didn't run into a tree. This was simply a means of eliminating him. And anybody in Congress who really wants to get to the bottom of what's going on, their life is in jeopardy, which is why most of them, the smart ones, really don't do much of anything but get up and posture and jump up and down and profess this and profess that.
And pick up their paycheck.
And pick up their paycheck. Because, of course, if you take a stand, you will either be arrested on trumped-up charge or you'll be simply eliminated. Unfortunately, that's what happened to Sonny Bono. And Bob, do you have a video on that at all?
Well, no, I'll tell you what. We're literally in the middle of it to complete it. I'm finishing a major investigation, real in-depth on it. We will have that finished. And in a couple of weeks, I believe, we may have a major magazine doing a story, at least on the surface, a good story on my Sonny Bono material. We're working on that right now. I'm talking, you know, a national magazine with about 15 million, 20 million readers. So I'll let you know as that works, but we're working on the DVD. We will have a report finished, and it's kind of upsetting, but nobody's paid attention.
And, of course, ladies and gentlemen, we do carry a number of Bob's DVDs. We carry the one on weather modification. We carry the one on certainly on the assassination of President Kennedy, and certainly one of my favorites, of course, is this one on UFOs. But, Bob, God bless. We'll talk to you real soon. Bye-bye.
Take care.
Well, this is Dr. Stan, and we're so fortunate to have access to people like Bob Fletcher, who's really been an investigative reporter since he was dragged into the Iran-Contra mess when somebody bought up his company, and then instead of manufacturing the toys they were supposed to, they were using it for smuggling things out of the country, the whole Iran-Contra, and he got dragged into that, and he's been investigating things ever since. So we carry his excellent DVD or video on weather modification, certainly on the Kennedy assassination, And then, of course, his analysis of UFOs, of course, I would disagree with a little bit. His information is great. The conclusion we come to would be slightly different, but I think you need to see it. You'll see some wonderful pictures of UFOs, and you'll see interviews with all sorts of people and material you'll never see elsewhere. Bob does a great job. If you'd like more information or the suggested gift for any of these products, give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. If you're interested in weather modification, we have a great book on that, Weather Modification, and then we have, of course, my four-tape set on, or CD set, either tape or CD, on weather modification, and then, of course, we have a couple of four-tape sets on chemtrails. We have a four-tape set on HART, the HARP, the High Altitude Auroral Research Project, and then, of course, we have a book, HARP, the ultimate weapon. HARP, the ultimate weapon. And you know, of course, they've had ice storms and snow in Baghdad. Haven't had that in 50 years. We're having some of the coldest weather we've ever had, and yet they're trying to convince us there's global warming. And, you know, people have to understand they know how to modify the weather. And, of course, if you wanted to create famine throughout the world, what a wonderful way to do it, to create droughts. And they know how to create droughts. How can I say that? Well, because, of course, Zygmunt Brzezinski said they would be able to create storms and droughts. In the book called Between Two Ages, which he wrote back in 1970, he talks about how in the future they're going to be able to create storms and droughts and all sorts of new diseases. Storms and droughts and droughts and all sorts of new disabling diseases. And now we have them. They call them chronic fatigue, fibromyalgia, Lyme disease, chronic chlamydia infections, chronic brucellosis infections, and all of these are genetically modified. We have AIDS, and of course AIDS is a chronic disease, it's lethal, but this is a genetically modified mycoplasma, and of course the HIV virus is a genetically modified virus. It's a variant of the vision of sheep virus, and we have, of course, the original secret records of the CIA special project. Was called the Special Virus Cancer Project. They tried to destroy all the copies. Fortunately, they didn't do a very good job of that. And those copies, either we have, you can get them from Don Scott. That's certainly one of our regular guests here at Radio Liberty. In fact, we'll have to have Don back on again. And what most people don't understand is that AIDS is a combination of two diseases. One is HIV, the other is a genetically modified mycoplasm, the same one that you find in much of Gulf War illness. So understand, ladies and gentlemen, we're up against organized evil. When you understand that, things really do begin to make sense. That's why you need to get my book, Brotherhood of Darkness. That's Brotherhood of Darkness, the book or the CD, and then we suggest my more recent talk, The Forbidden Secret, the four-tape, a four-CD set, The Supernatural, and the book that goes with that, written by Johanna Michelson, who was a medium, who was deeply involved in the occult, although she saw some of the most miraculous things, and then suddenly she realized this was all demonic. That's the beautiful side of evil, and of course my interviews with her, or at least a couple of them, and the four-tape or four-CD set, The Supernatural. Understand, we truly are involved in a spiritual battle for the souls of men and the survival of Christian civilization. Our number, 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. And then, of course, we ask you to go to our website of RadioLiberty.com if you'd like a free health catalog, if you'd like to get emergency food catalog or regular catalog, give us a call, and then pray for America, but pray for Radio Liberty for our provision and protection.